This is CliffCentral.com.
All right, transformation platform. Last week we had a fascinating conversation, the four of us, about the future, the changes around the bend, the next bend on our doorstep, wherever.
Well, we've just had one about the changes happening in the Stockton industry. Yeah. And might I just add it once again? Remember what we said? If it doesn't happen on a phone, it doesn't happen.
It's dead.
And this is an application on the phone, and it enables the whole industry. I mean, it's an incredible thing.
But what does it cost to set up an app?
That's a very good question. Probably differs, eh?
But, well, it depends on what you're trying to do with that app and where you're going for your development. So are you going local? So then you've got local South African cost. If you're going to app development, perhaps offshore, you know, you've always got some app developer in India who's always willing to do something for you. You know, there's app development happening in a lot of the first world, obviously, at first world pricing. So, it you know, that's how long is the piece of string, but and what are you trying to do? But simple sort of apps, you know, you can get stuff to pull, let's call it the widgets together. They actually, it's also quite interesting the way they build apps now is there's almost technology tools that allow you to pull the app together with building blocks. So
it's like you would set up a website now with WordPress. I mean,
the same sort of concept.
Templates are there.
Templates are there.
It will simplify in time, wouldn't it?
Yeah. So, I mean, something as simple like nowadays, if you go onto something like WordPress to design a website and you want a contact form, all you do is you say insert object. Web, you know, content or
a widget,
and it's all there, name, surname, whatever you want to, you know, contact form to be filled
Whereas
in.
Whereas before,
you'd have to program that all yourself.
HTML and the coding and the brackets.
And you get one comma in the wrong place and nothing works. So that those days are gone, and app development is in exactly the same space. The key is, it's not about writing as much as conceptualizing. So the key is actually having the right type of developer who can understand what you want to do and creating and building that for you in a way that is A, simple, that is flexible, because the other thing is you don't want to build it so, let's call it hard-coded, to use a term that comes from the past, that it can't change. So if you want your app that is quite fluid and you can use easily and agile, you want to make sure that you've got a developer who works with that mindset. It's not a huge step. And I must say, I think the scary part is more and more people are able to develop apps with relatively little insight into the back-end technology. They just understand what's going on in front. I mean, years gone by, you actually had to get somebody out to do your presentation for you. And then we all got Microsoft PowerPoint, and that was the end of the presentation preparers, because you just did it yourself. And, you know, years ago you had a typist who typed for you. Now you just put it all into Word. And apps are going to go the exact same route. You'll get an app capability, and before you know it, you and I will be building our own apps.
Fascinating, isn't it? And that's the conversation we had last week, talking about the future with this article by Goldman. I think it was. So we're trying to get the CEO of General Electric on the line so that we can talk about their innovation center that they started. Let's see. Is he on the line?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, there we go. Thomas Konditi, President and CEO of General Electric South Africa, and I think also transportation in the rest of Africa. Thomas, welcome.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for setting aside some time. We hope to get you back in the studio and talk leadership in our leadership show, which is the first hour of the afternoon. But right now, you launched an innovation center here in South Africa, not the first one, but you have a couple in the world, but the first one, I think, here in Africa. We want to talk about that in a minute. Before we go there, though, you've been in General Electric, just very quickly, for over 20 years, so you're a General Electric man, and you originate personally from Kenya, so you've had a lot of association with Africa over the years. And the other thing is, I didn't know, but General Electric has been in South Africa, or it's had presence here for over 100 years.
Absolutely.
So it's a I don't know, it's kind of part of the DNA. Woodwork, yeah, the DNA of our country. Yep. So, Thomas, have you had the launch of this innovation center already, or is it happening today?
Today is actually the official launch. We did a little bit of a soft launch a couple of weeks ago, but Today's the big day. We get kicked off, and then you'll see more over the next few weeks and months.
Okay. So just tell us, what exactly will it do, this Innovation Center?
Well, innovation is really about connecting the dots. And so what we're doing is we're taking the very large stable of technologies and capabilities that a company like GE brings, and we're looking at some of our tougher issues in our region, issues around power, around healthcare, around transportation, and we're going to use the Innovation Center to put some smart brains together and some hard workers and see if we can't come up with innovative solutions that really are specific for Africa and designed by Africa.
All right, and as General Electric, you know, why would you do this? I mean, is it part of the bigger picture? We cannot survive as businesses without a serious innovation culture.
Well, I think there's two things. One is GE really started on the innovation. Thomas Edison, who, by the way, was the first person to open a office in South Africa for GE, was the first office outside of the U.S., was really about finding a need and then creating a solution around it. So we're continuing in that spirit. I think for our region, the demographics and the fundamentals say that you have to take a bet on Africa. It's a long bet, and you will, I think, most definitely win by investing in people, investing in infrastructure growth, investing in transportation. These are just things that I think that Africa is going to grow on forever.
Yeah, because General Electric, you're yet to stay. As we say, you've been here, your presence has been over 100 years. You did leave in the 70s, I think, came back in the 90s because of our history. But you're yet to stay. You want to be part of the solution?
Yes, and I think this is a new day, and I think looking forward, you have a lot of youth and people who have a lot of energy to develop things, to grow things. That's part of GE's culture, is not only empowering our teams, but also giving them runway to go and develop and grow things. So I think for South Africa, that's a refreshing and a positive message. I think, why South Africa? It tends to be because the infrastructure and the underlying capability to host something like this is probably top in the region. And so bringing it here and continuing on long term just makes a lot of sense.
There's a product already coming out of it, or maybe it's an example of what can come out of it, a handheld V-scan pocket ultrasound. Tell us about that, sort of in the healthcare side of things.
Well, it's a great example of taking something that was developed in Europe at the time, that looks like an iPhone that essentially is an ultrasound scanner. So for those of you who have had babies or around people who have, it's the same in the doctor's office. It's a larger machine. Now you take that iPhone-sized device, and now you pair it up with a mother in the rural areas, in the village, and you ask yourself, how can I reduce maternal and infant mortality by using a device like this to see problems before they become too big? Mm. So that's part of the innovation, is how do I make something that's advanced work really at the village level or in other environments in Africa? Mm.
All right. Other successes here and abroad, just what these innovation centers can do and achieve?
Sure. It's about connecting the dots. So when we put in experts with 20, 30, 40 years of experience in a specific field, and we bring customers together with their problems, you get things like taking one of our deep sea pumps from our oil and gas business. You know, they bring up oil from the bottom of the ocean floor 5-6 kilometers deep, and applying that into the mining space to move tons of water out of mines. That was an innovation that came out of something like this. And then you have similar things in even in our transportation space, where using some of our digital technology to make railway crossings safer, so that you adapt to the environment and the traffic and make it so that a locomotive can pass by more safely. So those are some of the things that have come out of innovation centers.
All right, but now it's about innovating in Africa for Africa, which I think one needs to localize it. Richard has a comment or a question.
I guess my one comment or question per se is, how do you go about making sure that you stay relevant in the scenarios that you find yourself in Africa? Because often people perceive it as you're solving, let's call it, first world problem or the third world problem with first world technology, and it all sounds fine and well, but when it comes to the ground, does it actually work? And that's always the biggest challenge. I mean, your earlier example with a scanner, You know, does it work on the ground? And what are the challenges that you experience? So I guess my question is, how do you connect the innovation, which is let's call it the product component, and let's call it the application bit,
the
reality on the ground, to empower the people on the ground to actually use these great innovations? Because great innovations that aren't used properly don't really help either. So how do you connect those two worlds? Because, you know, my experience is that implementation is often the biggest challenge.
Well, I think it's not an easy one, and so the answer really is iteration.
Okay.
We use an approach here that we call fast works, and it basically means don't try to solve don't try to produce the perfect answer, the best solution, but do something that hits the minimum requirement of that particular problem, and then do it quickly and iterate. Come back again in 2 months. Come back again in 3 months. So what we see there is that's where you hit some of the user side as well as the application.
So the agile, let's call it the agile development and deployment methodology of constant refinement, constant change, and adapting as you go.
Exactly. So you may have started 5 years ago, still not perfect, but you're certainly at 20 or 30 iterations down the road. You'll get there.
And the best part is you're making a contribution as you go, because often some of the other, as they call them, the Ben-Hur type projects, they're just so massive that they talked about for years, and nobody ever actually knows when they happen because they just never do.
Along the way, a couple of those iterations might give you another solution for another problem. We've seen that with some of our power projects out there. Is you weren't even looking for that solution, and it popped out of a way to use some different kinds of fuel. So I think it is a methodology that works. You have to put the hours in. You have to have people on the ground working it, and then keep focused.
We also have Alison Yandu in the studio. Thomas, he wants to also make a comment, ask a question.
Yeah, Thomas, I think most people are familiar with the story of GE, huge conglomerate, industrial. Just, I'm interested to know from your perspective, from an innovation standpoint, how do you see the story of GE in the next, 10, 20, 50 years, in leading the charge, in disrupting, some of the spaces that, you talk about?
Yeah. So I tell people, actually I tell my daughter, you'll still be working on power in Africa when I'm long out of my seat at GE, because the fundamental fact is that 70% of Africans do not have power. 80% of Africans do not have access to good health care. 94% of Africans don't have access to good aviation links. And so when you have those kinds of large numbers behind some of these challenges, it's going to be you have a long, long time to fill the gap. And by the way, we continue to grow every year in terms of the volume of people who need the solutions. So I think it's a long-term play any which way you look at it. Today, maybe tough with a couple of economic cycles, commodity prices, etc. But you really have to play for the fact that 800 million Africans are going to want power for the next 50 years.
Okay. Oh, that's incredible.
I mean, these are huge numbers. Mm.
So, absolutely.
I mean, you'd have thought that, with the whole Africa Rising story, we're making headway in terms of bringing some of these numbers down. So from your perspective, operating across the length and breadth of the continent, what do you think is the biggest stumbling block? I mean, I shared with the class the other week the fact that, less than 10% of Africa's total trade is among African countries. Just that alone, I mean, just goes to show the hurdles that we still, are looking at. What is the stumbling block to getting much of the headway to bring these numbers down?
Well, I think two things. One is, if you look at countries that have had very little resources but have gone a long way in a very short period of time, places like Dubai and the Emirates, places like Rwanda and how they've progressed since the 90s tragedy, these are places that have vision. And I think that having a vision, one that you implement, goes a long way to actually getting you down the road to deliver what you want to. So vision is one. The other one is I think you have to work together. You just made the comment around the regional, you know, do we trade amongst each other? Do we have open borders? Can workers, and by workers I don't mean just, you know, labor. I mean intelligence and expertise, can it cross the border easily? Uh-huh. When you open those borders, you look at places that have done that, whether it's Europe or the U.S. even, that has almost no borders between its states, you have a lot more development that can happen with those resources. So I think we need to look at more of that.
Okay.
Thomas, just your innovation hub, back to that, there seems to be a link also with, I mean, in South Africa, enterprise development is a very big part of the National Development Plan, which you very quickly mentioned on your, communication documents about your business, that you support that, a part of broad-based black economic empowerment is your development of small enterprises, and there seems to be a link between this innovation center and that specific effort. Is that so?
Yes, there is, and twofold. The first thing is that the innovation center actually came out of some of the ideas we had when we worked with Transnet on delivering the latest round of locomotives. So as we were working on the contract for that, and we were looking for ways to localize more effectively, not just buying from local suppliers, but how do you really go with the spirit of developing South Africa? We came up with this idea of the Innovation Center. We said we would invest in an Innovation Center. We will hire South Africans. We will really develop value here. So that's on one side. On the other side is we're really looking to take South African suppliers and turn them into global suppliers, because the leverage they have when they can sell into the global market is significantly higher than just selling locally. The foreign exchange impact, the quality, reliability, and the reputation are all things that we're going to continue to invest in on the supplier development side, and hoping the Innovation Center helps us really shine up a number of our suppliers so they can be big players outside of SA.
Now, that's that I like, Alice and Louis. I mean, so what General Electric can bring to the party for SMEs, potentially, call it your competitive advantage when it comes to enterprise development in the biggest scheme of transformation, is the connection globally. While if I'm a SME or an enterprise that could supply to a local business, then obviously my market is limited to the local South African market. What you're saying is, it's a much bigger picture, isn't it?
They bring scale, right?
For more scale. And it's a global village. Things are changing. So if you're a local, I mean, that's the challenge you have as General Electric, is to actually crack this local market when it comes to transformation. And then when you want to fight for tenders and you don't have a good level, on the BBBE scorecard, then you have trouble. You know, it could be challenging. But that's something you bring that local businesses don't. I've never thought of that, to be honest.
Yeah, in other words, I think what GE possibly is doing here, Thomas will correct me, that you're growing your own team as well. This is the process of that.
Well, yeah. I think the scale tells the story. If I buy $500 million from South Africa in any one year, I am buying $50 billion as a global supply chain from all my suppliers globally. So I look at that and I say, even if I got 100% from one supplier, I'm not exposing them to really 100 times more that I could do elsewhere. I think the other part of it is absolutely true. We're good at buying globally, so you want to leverage what we're good at. And we don't just try to localize. We love localization. We love transformation, because we believe that if you build an economy, that economy is going to want more of what we do: power, healthcare, aviation, transportation. So, you know, it's not purely altruistic. It does tie back to what we're in business for.
Just very quickly, the actual facility physically. Well, I know you've got a floor, first floor, and second. I mean, is there something significant to that? Who actually occupies this facility?
Yeah, and how does it work? I mean, if I've got a great idea, how do I walk in and start talking with you guys?
So it's a working building, and the way to think of it is in three major parts. When you first walk in, you really walk into a place where you can experience and touch and look at GE's technologies, and then work with the team that's on that floor around ideas that can tied to your issues or your problems or your challenges. So that's really where a lot of the innovation will be spawned, is on the first floor. There's everything from just the information about GE to virtual reality, looking at potential solutions. On the second floor is our healthcare business. And our healthcare business is, you know, I love my business, transportation, but healthcare has some very cool technologies that, if you can put them into our context, would make a big difference to people and to their lives. So you'll have the hospital of the future. You come through and you can see some of our best technologies, our most interesting ones, and you'll have doctors and medical professionals come through, figure out how they can use that. And then finally, on our top floor is our learning and development center. So GE is well known for its management training and development and leadership development. So that's now brought into the region, into Africa, into South Africa, as part of the Innovation Center. So it really is a working facility.
Just spontaneously, I want your comment on this. About 2 weeks ago, I think we had a man in here, Adil Ntshabaleng, trying to demystify, I think we said, Alice and Louis, to try and demystify this goal and ambition that government has to create black industrialists. And we discussed that at great length. And then even after the show at his office, that one can get stuck, because we know we've all moved through the industrialization age now, as a globe, and now if you want to create industrialists, then you have to somehow incorporate the new world,
the fourth industrial revolution.
Yeah, the fourth industrial revolution. Yeah. And somewhere in one of your documents, I saw this comment, and I hope I have it right. I couldn't find it quick enough, but digital industrialization. Is that, or is it innovative industrialization, or how do we incorporate the new Internet of Things, the new technological world we find ourselves in, and create industrialists at the same time?
Well, this is one of the things that excites me the most. Is you take what is apparently an old world company, or a company that's been around for a long time, and you'd say, you know, where is the excitement going to come from? We make engines, we make a lot of heavy. Now, if you take all those components, the engines in our aircraft engines, the systems on our trains and locomotives, and you put a digital layer and you create what is effectively known as a digital twin, you can now start applying the power of software and analytics to not only running it better, but maintaining it better and then delivering more value. And I think that's where it's exciting for our young people. You know, instead of just creating an app that's a game, you can create an app that's going to take 2% of the fuel cost out of a 4-kilometer locomotive, and that's really hundreds of thousands of dollars of impact. So I think that's what you're going to see as a real exciting place to play, is connecting the idea part and the software side to the real world, or to the physical world. Mm. And you know, we call ourselves a digital industrial company, just for that reason.
That's fascinating. So maybe it starts with a digital twin, and that's to take cost out of the system, or to make it more effective, or whatever, streamline it, more competitive. And then the next step would be, as we see in this world, it's happening exponentially, so you actually transform it, whatever that industry is. And I think more and more we're gaining confidence as a society that we can do that, that it's not just about digital twinning, but eventually totally revolutionizing, like Uber. You know, we think the new word is Uberization. You know, we Uberize mm-hmm. something. So that's maybe where it's going in the next few years.
I think absolutely, and it's basically thinking that in the analog world, you can solve for, as a human being, maybe three or four things at any one time when you're operating a system. A digital system can optimize 1,000 or 1,000,000 things all at the same time. So you have to be able to get some benefit out of that. And I think that's where you're going to see not only a lot of value being created, but also great new ideas that we haven't thought about.
In fact, this is where I think for Africa it's all the more exciting, because, you know, we talk a lot about Africa leapfrogging. You know, when we talk about industrialization of Africa, I think it will be a mistake to think about, you know, what happened in Europe, you know, centuries ago. Because right. what we now have is the fact of technology, as well as these, you know, pre-existing problems. But, you know, giving Africa the opportunity to leapfrog again and do things that no other part of the world has done.
Well, and think of this, the interim, or the space between the physical asset and the software side, is a whole world of service and maintenance. You know, something that a lot of you see a lot of places that have invested in a lot of assets, but there's no service, there's no maintenance keeping it running. And when you do that, you can take, you know, for example, in my business, you have a locomotive. You can make one of those locomotives last 30 years or 3 years, depending on how you treat that asset as a in the service mode. So I think the service space is going to be a big one for our people long term.
So, Thomas, when we hear about autonomous transportation, for example, obviously everyone's looking at what people like Apple are doing in that space. You know, Elon Musk of the world. How do you foresee that play in the African context? Because obviously we still don't have roads. I mean, infrastructure is still a problem, but when that finally comes to being, what would that mean for Africa? Is that a question that GE would also be, you know, looking into?
I could theorize, but I think it wouldn't be necessarily my space. But what I can tell you is this, is regardless of the space you're looking at, you really have to ask yourself, is the idea of leapfrogging really the space we're going to be good at as Africans? Do we leapfrog 20 years of experience of other countries and just go straight to the answer? Mm-hmm. I think you'll see more of that. I mean, Uber showing up in South Africa or in Kenya or in Nigeria, in some places, those places are going from an old taxi to now Uber. Mm. And that means we've skipped a number of things, and I think we should see more of that.
My last question to you, and thank you for your time, and it's totally different from our conversation. Coming from the GE stable, are you interested in leadership? Is that another passion of yours as a CEO? That's General Electric.
Well, it is, and I think for two reasons. One is that I am a product of GE's focus on leadership. I don't think I could be distinguished from the next guy in the room when I first started with GE 20-some years ago. But with relentless focus, a fair amount of introspection, and really just keeping your head down with trying to get the job done and letting sort of GE take care of your growth, it has been a real pleasure for me. So, half of my time is spent on people and developing people and how we can grow our leaders. So it's a passion, and I think it's essential for any company that wants to be around in 10, 20, 30 years.
Well, we our first hour of our three-hour leadership transformation platform is a leadership masterclass, and we're certainly going to invite you back to talk about leadership, also your passion for the continent, your understanding of what it takes to lead successfully up in Africa. I think later this month we have that sort of conversation, and I hope that we could pull you in, rope you in just for that. I mean, this conversation now was exciting and interesting, but let's look at the leadership component of it. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thanks, Thomas.
Take care.
That was Thomas Konditi, President and CEO of GE South Africa, with a cell phone ringing in the background, which is on our side, not on his side. Thank you so much for joining us. That's the Transformation Platform. And I think it would be interesting. He comes from Kenya. That's where he was born, and he's been
involved. I can hear the passion for Africa.
Yeah.
We too are passionate about Africa. I mean, it's fundamental what he's saying, that we're going straight to the answers.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, 20 years, 30 years gap, you leapfrog that straight to the answers. So that means a whole lot of opportunities.
Yeah, very interesting conversation. More interesting than I thought it would be, to be honest.
But hey, it's GE after all.
Yeah, I mean, I can see us wanting to venture beyond just the innovation center, but we'll have him back and we'll have all those conversations. Next up, our leadership in education feature. Look forward to that. We've got a principal on the line from Soweto who seems to also influence other principals. So we're going to explore that a little bit. So stay with us.
This is CliffCentral.com.